off we go. And we're back, Stripe Show Podcast, on a Thursday. Super pumped about this one. What a week. My goodness. On fire this week with the podcast. Today's Stripe Show brought to you by About Golf Simulators, glowing in the backdrop. Already got a couple lessons in here this morning. Three more this afternoon. But before we get to that, we're going to bring in another Oklahoma State Cowboy. If you watched yesterday, one of my favorite coaches, Boyd Summerhays. I literally could talk to Boyd probably, all day about golf, about the golf swing, about golf psychology and all things. And obviously Tony Finau playing great. Another one of his students playing great. Man joining me here today, Taylor Gooch. Thanks for joining me, man. How are you doing?
Man, doing good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Golf is rolling into season right now everywhere across the country. I know you guys have been in Asia, down in the part of the world. I actually spent a little time down in Malaysia and Singapore. Is Singapore like the cleanest place, the coolest place you've ever been? I mean, I tell people it's immaculate.
Yeah, I mean, walking around downtown Singapore, and I mean, it's just like I said, it's a big city, obviously, mm-hmm. And so it's easily the cleanest place I've ever been. It was a really cool place, and I'm looking forward to going back for sure.
Yeah, back to back wins, man. You take the title in Australia. That looked like a good time and a party there for LIV, and then you guys go over to Singapore, and you win that one. And back to back heading into this week in Tulsa, which we'll get to in a second. But I got a couple questions about your game because we got a lot to talk about. There's this USGA thing that happened, what I want to get to, and that I want to get your thoughts on. Official World Golf Rankings, a lot of things up in the air, obviously, that LIV has to be concerned about, and obviously concerning to you and what happened with the change in the qualification getting into the U.S. Open. So we'll get to that a little bit later, but I want to talk about your game first. Tell my audience what it's like to shoot 10 under in a round of golf back-to-back days. Like, what is that actually like mentally?
Man, that's a great question. I keep saying I wish I knew what like caused it, because we could like try to write a book on it, and I wouldn't have to make birdies and you wouldn't have to do lessons anymore, and like we could just sell the book and everyone would buy it and we'd be good. What's ironic is like when I shot 62-62, it was, I hate to say it like this, it was easy. I didn't make a putt outside of, long spot I made was, I made one putt outside 10 feet. It was like a 12 footer. And so, for me, one of the strong suits of my game is my mid iron, short iron wedge play, and the golf course, that we were playing, it was tailored towards that. If you could get in the fairway off the tee, you were going to have some opportunities, to hit some good shots in there, and the greens mm-hmm. were phenomenal. So it was 2 days of really, really easy golf, because I was hitting everything really close. I had a bunch of good numbers. I mean, as we all know, there's times and weeks where you are hitting it in you're like in between clubs, what feels like every approach shot. And then there's mm-hmm. some weeks like when I shot 62-62, it's like you step up and it's like, okay, it's just a perfect number for this 9-iron or this perfect number for this 8-iron or whatever it may be. And so it was just, it was a perfect storm of a couple of days of, a lot of really good numbers, a lot of really good swings. And, mm-hmm. Obviously made a bunch of those 6 to 8 footers that are kind of momentum swingers in the round that kind of propel you to those really low scores. So, I hate to say it was easy, but it wasn't chipping in, and it's not like all of a sudden the hole looked like a basketball hoop. Like, I just kind of got in the zone where it felt like every shot I was going to hit on the approach part was going to be close.
Yeah, it does look easy though when you guys get it going like that. It looks easy. Like you guys are in the zone and it's almost unconscious. And I think one of the key characteristics that you guys have is you're not afraid to go low. Like you guys just keep going. And for me and in my audience listening, there's like this uncomfortable number you get to, right? And it's like, oh my gosh, like there's probably a 3 handicap listening right now. And he shoots 1 or 2 under on the front. All of a sudden, he's 3 under with 4 to play. And it like hits him. Like, just keep going. But the reality is, like, there's almost like an internal governor where it says, okay, it's time to protect. Because even if I bogey the last one coming in or bogey, I still shoot 1 under, right? And it's almost like you let your guard down. And I kind of was that way. I kind of got that way a little bit. I would get uncomfortable at times. And you don't get uncomfortable, do you? There's not a number like, okay, now I'm 6 under. That's enough. Pull it back a little bit and let's protect. You just keep going. Let's go. 7, 8, 9, 10. It never hits you to protect, does it?
You know, yes and no. Because there's still, like I said, out there, there are some tee shots that are a little bit uncomfortable. And you do sit there and you're like, you know, I'm 600. That's a pretty good score. You know, I don't need to keep my foot on the gas in some areas, but you know, so it is kind of like a conscious decision of like, let's keep going, let's keep putting the foot down, you know? And so, so yes and no to that question. You know, we're obviously not afraid to keep going as low as possible. We know, you know, when we're hot, you want to try to take advantage of that and keep going as much as possible to try to separate yourself from the field as much as possible. And so, but there's still those times and those moments where you're like, you know, I'm 8 under par and there's a tucked pin and, you know, do I really need to go at this pin or do I hit it to 20 feet and, you know, maybe make a 20 footer? And so, at least me, like I do have those thoughts of like, you know, you're having a pretty good round, you know, what do we do here? And so, it's obviously very dependent too of how you're feeling that day, like how good your game is. Cause there's times where, like I said, this past week when I go 10 and 10, it's like, dude, I was just seeing and hitting, like I knew where the ball was going. And so when you do get it going like that, it definitely makes it easier to keep the foot down and keep going.
You played the PGA Tour, for a period of time. I think you got out there fairly consistent back in 2017. And now you've been on the Live Series for, you know, about a year or so. And so you've played both. And I'm sure like a lot of my audience, and I kind of put this out there for some questions. And, you know, one of the questions is for you as a player that's played both tours, what are some of the major differences as a player out there on the Live Tour that maybe wasn't happening on the PGA Tour?
Yeah, you know, it's been cool to see some of the guys like Peter Uline, a former teammate of mine, who was a number one amateur in the world and obviously a great, great player. And you know, he had a lot of success over in Europe and when he turned pro. And then, you know, he never really seemed to get comfortable out on the PGA Tour. And then, you know, Alan Liv, he's been probably the best player over the last 12 months on Liv from a consistency perspective. And so, you know, it's funny how certain golfers are comfortable with certain situations, you know, and sometimes there's no rhyme or reason. And sometimes there is a rhyme or reason. You know, I think, you know, one of the things I talk about that I enjoy, about Liv and the 54 holes versus 72 holes is, you know, my prep, week in and week out, you know, Monday through Thursday now, as opposed to Monday through Wednesday, my prep looks a little bit different and I can spend a little bit more time, like on my game and on the range and on the chipping green. Like I can put a little bit more work and a little bit more time in week in and week out on honing my craft because, you know, I'm not playing 4 or 5 weeks in a row and 4 round events. And I only have, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday to prepare for those 4 rounds. You know, we just have more time to work on our game. And for me that, has its benefits. And then, you know, for some guys, like Cam Smith talked about it, in Singapore, he was asked, you know, it appears that you're getting, you know, your feet under you, you're starting to play some good golf now. And he said, you know, and they asked why. And he was basically like, you know, listen, I've gotten more golf under my system in the last month. You know, it took me, you know, a couple months of playing, and we've started playing more golf. And, you know, I think that's an example of someone who's kind of seeing, like, you know, he needs a little bit more tournament prep to get, you know, his game sharp, and, or a little bit more tournaments under his belt to get his game, you know, sharp to where he is comfortable. And so, you know, that's obviously a huge difference, between PGA Tour and LIV is, you know, the weekly preps before the mm-hmm. tournament begins.
3-day tournament versus four. What's the different heading in from a mindset? Because I know, like, when you, I've coached some PGA Tour champions when I was younger, and when they made the jump, and the fact that it was 3 days, they felt like they couldn't, you know, they couldn't miss out. Like they had to probably be a little bit more aggressive because they knew they didn't have the fourth day. So mm-hmm. when you play three versus four, how has that landed for you? And would you say you're a PGA Tour winner? You won the RSM Classic. You've won a couple on LIV. Would you say it's easier to win a 3-day event versus four? How does that land for you?
Man, that's a great question. It's one that obviously we've talked about within LIV, and I've talked about with buddies that, you know, are still on tour and everyone in between. And they're just different. I don't think one is easier or one is, you know, worse or better or whatever. They're just different. You know, I use the term, it's more of a sprint. You know, when you have four rounds, you have a little bit of room for error, in a round where it feels like, on LIV, it just feels like, do we only got 3 days? If you have one off day, you know, unless you have a 10 shot lead, if you have one off day, you're probably going to have a tough time winning, where on tour, you can kind of get away with that day. Usually, you know, where things aren't, you know, necessarily clicking. And so, you know, one's just a little bit more of a marathon. The other one's a little bit more of a sprint. But at the end of the day, the cream always rises, you know, the guy who's playing the best golf that week is, and shoots low scores, they're going to win. I mean, there's just no getting around it. And so, it definitely has a different feel to it. It has a little bit more, like I said, of just a sprint feel of like, man, I got to hit the ground running. I got to get going. I can't like kind of work my way into the tournament on Thursday, you know, and it's like on tour, it's like, you know, you obviously want to shoot all the low scores you yeah. can, but it's like on tour, it's like, all right, let's kind of get into the Thursday round, you know, let's get under, you know, depending on where you're playing, but it's like, let's get something posted under par and kind of, you know, work our way into this tournament, where on LIV, it kind of feels like, you know, if you don't go shoot a low one early, you're already behind the eight ball.
Now, some of you guys, you know, when you went to LIV, you know, you guys signed the contract and you got paid, as I understand, some of it up front, if not most of it. And then others, you know, there's different contracts and we don't need to get into all of that, but sometimes that money was up front. And so I'm curious, like when you look at like Cam, who lives right down the road from where my studio is here in Ponte Vedra. And like, he kind of admitted maybe he put his clubs down a little too long, you know, in the off season. And now he's kind of working himself in. DJ, you know, probably didn't quite look like DJ in the first part of the season. Now on the flip side, Brooks did, you know, Brooks looked great. Patrick Reed looked great at the Masters. You finished 34th at the Masters. Clearly when you shoot 62, your game's in pretty good order, you know, so you kind of seen both sides. Like some guys maybe pulled back a little bit, maybe got a little too comfy. Other guys, not so much. Is that the case? Do you feel more so on LIV, like because the money's so rich and great and up front, like, it's easier to pull back? Or was that even the case on the PGA Tour, where guys would come in maybe, you know, a little out of shape at the first part of the year, and like you hear in football, they kind of work themselves into shape as the season goes?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a terrible talking point, honestly, about guys, you know, easing their way in or whatever. Like DJ, for example, won in Maui 1 year after not touching a club for 6 weeks, and he goes out mm-hmm. and has a new driver in the bag. They never hit and a new putter and new this and that that he hadn't hit, and he shows up and he wins, you know. Mm-hmm. So like at the end of the day, like we're all competitors. Like none of us want to go out there and not show up, you know. So I think that's a, you know, I think that's easy to maybe look into that from the outside if you've never been there in the thick of it on the weekend at a professional golf tournament, to be like, oh, this guy made so much money, and so what's, why's he got to show up? And it's like, you know, on the flip side is, you know, okay, so he, if he did that to make all the money and he now has an opportunity to make more, like you can't have both sides of the conversation go your way.
You're still motivated, right? What you're saying, you're still motivated.
100%. And so, you know, I think, like I said, with Cam, when you said, you know, it's like he might put the clubs down too long, like, you know, a couple things. One, this is the first time any of us have had any real extended off season, any break. And so I'm sure someone like Cam and me at times, you know, it's like we want to actually enjoy a little bit of downtime. And so, you know, I'm sure some of the guys now look back and say, you know, maybe I'm going to approach that a little bit differently next off season, you know? Mm-hmm. And so again, it's new, it's different. We're figuring this out. And it's all new stuff. And so you got to figure out what's best for you. But I hate the talk point, because I just know how untrue it is of, they're comfortable, you know, financially comfortable. So why practice? It's like, that's only going to come from agendas or from people who haven't put their blood, sweat, and tears into this.
Well, speaking of agendas, let's move the conversation to what has come now from the USGA. I want you, for my audience, Taylor, to set the stage for what has happened here. You qualified for the US Open via your play last year on the PGA Tour, right? Mm-hmm. And then that criteria for qualification, like, when did that change? How did it change? And now it's affected you to this point that now you're no longer qualified to play in the US Open. Clean that up for me, for my audience, and how that's all transpired.
Yeah. So, you know, last year, whenever I got suspended from the tour, it was call it June 1st. It was right around the beginning of June. And so I couldn't play on the PGA Tour anymore. And so I couldn't play the FedEx Cup playoffs. And fortunately, I played well enough in the beginning of the season and middle of the season that I had got enough FedEx points to qualify for the Tour Championship. While I couldn't play, I was still technically, I'd qualified. And
you're in the top 30.
You know, I was top 30. Yeah, I was ended up being 29th on the FedEx Cup list going into the Tour Championship. And so that was, you know, in my mind was crucial, because, you know, I knew for this season, I knew that getting world ranking points was going to be a rocky road. And so I knew to still have a chance to play in the you know, majors, that was going to be my best route, is by qualifying for the Tour Championship. And because the U.S. Open, the British Open, and Augusta have always, as far as I'm aware of, since the FedEx Cup playoffs have been a thing on the PGA Tour, if you've qualified for the Tour Championship, you get an exemption into those three majors. The PGA of the PGA Championship is the only one that that was not a criteria for getting an exemption from. And so obviously when I got to a championship, I was hopeful that the you know, the RNA, Augusta, and the USGA would you know, put me into their field, give me an exemption based off of my body of work and get into the Tour Championship. And so it was great whenever the Masters came out and said, you know, here's the field. And whenever they release the field, they list, you know, how this person qualified into the field, how they got into the field. And so for me, it said, you know, Taylor Gooch via, you know, section 12 or whatever it was, he was top 50 OWGR by the end of the calendar year. So he was, you know, qualified into the field via his world ranking. And also he qualified for the, you know, PGA Tour Championship, which is another criteria that we are going to, that he qualified for our tournament for as well.
So to be clear, the Masters honored that you were in the top 30, even though suspended. They honored that, right, as the criteria for you to play in the Masters, but the U.S. Open is not.
Yeah, and so whenever Augusta did that at, you know, the end of last year, like just before Christmas time, when they came out and announced that, I was I was pumped because, you know, I thought, okay, if Augusta is going to come out and do this and recognize, you know, my qualification for the Tour Championship, you know, that's kind of setting the precedent that, you know, I was hopeful that the RNA and USGA would also do the same thing and honor me qualifying for the Tour Championship. And then in February, early February, the USGA came out and announced some changes in their criteria. And the change was, and the wording was, rather than, you know, if you qualify for the Tour Championship, you're exempt into our field. It was, if you qualify and are eligible to play, you're exempt into our field. And so that was obviously really disappointing because, you know, that rule change, it affected one person, which was me. And it's, you know, obviously I had communication with the USGA about it, and they said, you know, all the, you know, politically correct talking points of, we have to, you know, basically be aware of all the, you know, changing things in golf, and we have to protect our field and this, and we're always forward thinking, and we think this is the best way to, you know, X, Y, and Z. And so, you know, I was like, you know, I understand things are changing in the golf landscape. But the disappointing part was like, you know, this rule change is really, it's never affected anyone previously, and it's never going to affect anyone again. And so this rule change literally only affects one person. And so that was obviously, you know, disappointing. And, you know, I know that there's different routes to still qualify for the U.S. Open. But like I said, after Augusta set the precedent, I was hopeful, you know, everyone knows, like, the Masters, like, they're it, you know, and everyone kind of follows suit. They're kind of the pinnacle. They kind of carry the torch for all of golf. And so, and then the RNA came out and did what the Masters did, and they recognized me qualifying for the Tour Championship as an exemption into the field for the Open. And so, obviously, I was really excited about that. And so, that's kind of, you know, the timeline and how things kind of unfolded on that end. And
So every major championship is honoring the criteria except for the U.S. Open, right? Is basically where we're at this point. Because you're in the PGA. You're in the PGA in a couple weeks. And you can still qualify for the U.S. Open. You're currently 60th in the official world golf ranking. You'd have to have an excellent PGA, right? To still get into the U.S. Open. You could have went through qualifiers. You elected not to do that. But the USGA, for all intents and purposes, you probably weren't expecting that based off of the decision that you got from Augusta. Do you feel like perhaps the reasoning of that, when you look at the other issues that are happening in golf right now? I mean, there's so many topics outside of actually hitting a golf ball. It's great for the podcast business, so thank you for that. But there's so many questions to be asked, right? Outside of, oh, hey, Taylor, how you playing? You know, so that's why I wanted to start with how you were playing. And one of them, of course, is the rollback, right? The ball rollback, which the USGA has on, and it sounds like that's going to be moving forward, and they're going to put it out there to get feedback. And they, of course, they need buy-in, I think, from the PGA Tour players. Like, they need buy-in from that. And from what I'm hearing and the people that I know, I'm not sure they're going to be getting the buy-in. So, you know, is this an effort from Mike Wan, perhaps, at the USGA, throwing the PGA Tour a bone, you think, on that and saying, hey, I could use your support on the flip side with the rollback, perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, I think you would be blind to say that there isn't some aligning of sides with the USGA, PGA Tour, and the decisions that have been made. I mean, the irony, I was actually talking with someone recently. You know, my first couple of years on tour, it was quite well known that the PGA Tour and the USGA had butted heads for a while. And, you know, that's why it's just kind of ironic to me now that they've somewhat aligned and they're kind of on the same side of things, which, you know, I understand at the end of the day, it's still business. And so, you know, I get that, you know, people are going to try to pit people against each other in this new landscape of golf. And, you know, the USGA has aligned with the PGA Tour in, you know, a few different ways. You know, they've hired the PGA Tour to handle the scoring of the US Open. You know, they've you know, in more ways than one, they have aligned with the PGA Tour. And so this is, you're not going to be able to convince me that this wasn't a way for the USGA to say, hey, PGA Tour, you know, we got your back, you got our back. And yeah, because again, I go back to it, this criteria change, it very well could, they could have said starting like the other majors, just like Augusta came out and the, you know, the majors have basically changed the same rule that the USGA has changed to, you know, for the Tour Championship. They've done the same thing, but they haven't, they've done it starting in 2024. And the, you know, the disappointing part is I was, you know, in communication with, you know, some of the people over the, with the PGA of America the last couple months before getting, you know, an invitation into the PGA, PGA Championship. And, you know, I keep saying this, I think the majors can be the binding grounds of professional golf and for all of golf in general, you know, and I don't understand, you know, why, you know, the majors would want to continue to make golf divisive. You know, it's the one place, given the new landscape of golf, it's the one place where the true best players in the world, let's get them all together and let's battle it out. And that's great for the fans. It's great for the players. It's great for everyone involved. And so that was a long-winded answer, but yes, I think you're right.
Yeah. I think there's a lot there to unpack. I think the first point with the four major championships, you know, for people who listen to the podcast, I think everything that has transpired with LIV Golf, whether you like LIV or don't, I think probably empowered the major championships even more because this was now the opportunity for them to all come together. I was hoping that they would all stay above the fray. I think they have for the most part, but I think in this particular example, I think it's really unfortunate. It doesn't seem fair, you know, based off of what has happened in the past and the criteria that you were dealt to qualify for next year's major championships, for that to change last minute. It doesn't seem right. So it then takes the discussion further with the official world golf rankings. Oh yeah. Another data point to talk about that is out there. And how you handle the official world golf rankings, which there's criteria to meet when a tour starts a new tour on how you can qualify and get official world golf ranking points. Because let's face it, if you were still on the PGA Tour, I mean, you're one of the best players in the world. You qualified for the Tour Championship and didn't even play all the tournaments. I mean, you were in the top 30. You're one of the best iron players in the world. Like, so, like, you would have those points, right? Because the PGA Tour is established. So LIV starts, they don't get the points. And now, after this period of time, they're still trying to get the points. I'll be honest with you, Taylor. Like, I've had this conversation with a lot of people. I'm not sure what is fair, you know, like I'm not sure what is fair in how you look at LIV and it being so different, right? Forget about like the feel of LIV and the way it's presented, right? And the casualness of it, whether that's your taste or not, that's totally different. But just in the context of the amount of events you play, 48 in the field, no cut, three rounds, like, okay, like I recognize that no one at least in my mind, no one should ever critique whether or not you guys have great players. Like that doesn't even cross my mind. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like Taylor Gooch is a great player. Dustin Johnson's a great player. You should not be surprised to see Brooks Koepka almost win the Masters. That's not surprising.
No.
These are great world-class players. But there's only 48. There's three rounds. There's no cut. How do you weigh all that out versus traditional golf on the PGA Tour, right? Full fields, four rounds. And I know things are changing, elevator versus – there's just a lot of damn moving parts, man. And there's a big gap, you know, in what one tour is versus the other and the way they operate. So I'm just not sure, like, what is fair. Do you put any thought to that? Do you guys sit around like other players and say, all right, here's the way it should be, right? Let's start writing this down, like an idea. Like, let's put this down and send it to the official World Golf Ranking and say, this is fair. Check this out. Do you guys talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, because at the end of the day, we want to play the majors still, and there's obviously a handful of guys that, are exempt into a lot of majors for a lot of years to come within LIV. And then there's some guys like me and Joaquin Niemann and Abe Anser and guys like that, that have
Mito Pereira
and Mito. And, mm-hmm. There's a lot of them that have played a lot of majors and are for sure deserving of continuing to play a lot of majors. But, we're not in them, and we're not going to be unless the system changes. Yeah. And we all certainly recognize that there is no easy solution. We understand the complexity of this whole problem, right? Mm-hmm. And I think you'd be crazy to think that the fans and the golf world in general wouldn't be better off with a solution being figured out. Like, we have to figure this out, not only selfishly for my future major, possibilities. But I think if I'm, and I've used this as an example, if I'm Rory McIlroy and I go win Augusta next year, and Joaquin Niemann and Mito Pereira and Taegu Chabanser, Paul Casey, like all of these guys that are world caliber players that should be in the field that are not, there's mm-hmm. there's going to be an asterisk on majors starting in 2024 unless something is fixed, unless there is some sort of compromise, some sort of solution. And unfortunately, there's the governing bodies of the OWGR and the board members of the OWGR, and the way that the system is set up, there's too many people incentivized for different reasons to not change. And that's why I said from the get-go, we all knew the OWGR was going to be a bumpy road. And, I still have hope in reasonable minds, and I have hope that the fans are going to be what prevails, because at the end of the day, I said this to JJ and JP the other day on a podcast. I'm like, the only people suffering in the golf world right now, given the way things are, a handful of executives within the establishment, and then, fans. Like, at the end of the day, the like I said, the majors are where the best of the best come together. Doesn't matter what tour you play on, doesn't matter where you live, doesn't matter who you are. Like, they've done a good job over, the course of my career of the best players really, they figure out who the best players are and get them in the field. Yeah. And currently, that is happening as of right now, but starting in 2024, that won't be the case unless there is change.
When you signed up for LIV, was it positioned to you by Greg or whoever, Greg Norman, that you would still like getting official World Golf Rankings, and still being able to play the PGA Tour, like it was still going to be a reality. Like, that's not going to be a problem if you come over here. Like, there's really nothing to figure out there. Was it positioned to you that way, or was it, no, there's going to be some stuff still to figure out here, and I'm really not sure.
Well, so, when I made the move to LIV, I knew it was going to be a bumpy road getting world ranking points. I knew that LIV and Greg Norman, they were going to fight for us to try to give us the chance to get world ranking points and give us the chance to still potentially play the PGA Tour if we chose to. Like, that was always made, apparent that we're going to go to bat for you guys to still have the same opportunities. But we all knew how big of a change this was going to be for the golf landscape, professional golf landscape. And we know change is hard for people. And so, you know, we knew, like I said, that we knew this was going to be a bumpy road, and it's certainly a long ways away from getting figured out, but by no means was there ever guarantees from anyone that this was going to be easy, seamless, and you're still going to get everything that you want out of this.
Yeah.
Because of course we all still want to play major championships. Like I've continued to use the phrase, it's the binding grounds. Like I think it's the place where everyone comes together, and you know, battles it out. And that's where I think it has an opportunity. Like you said, I think the majors have an opportunity to really rise above and say, hey, this is going on there, that's going on there, but we're going to figure out how to continue to be the place where the best of the best come together. And we got to figure out, you know, who the best of the best are. And mm-hmm. currently the system does not reflect who the best are via the OWGR.
Well, golf can be rigid, as you know, right? I mean, it's it can be a rigid sport. And I think the follow up to that is there's those and the critics that would say, well, you know, when you signed up for LIV, like you knew what you were getting into, right? And that you weren't going to get official world golf ranking points, and you knew it was going to be a bumpy road and all those. Mm-hmm. So it shouldn't be a surprise that any of this is still the way it is, you know, to this point, right? And I saw that some of your fellow colleagues like Lee Westwood and Ian Poulter and others now, you know, they officially resigned from the DP World Tour, you know, because of a lot of the same restrictions that they have now put on them, winning the latest legal battle. And they've just officially threw in the towel, resigned. They're not eligible for the Ryder Cup anymore. And you look at the comments and you look at that and say, hey, these guys knew what they were getting into. They shouldn't be surprised at all by what has transpired at this point. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously I've seen, you know, all the same stuff, and there's not, by no means are we surprised. Do we think, you know, especially with the year, I didn't follow because I.
Lost you there.
Hear me?
There you go. Yeah, gotcha.
Okay.
You got you back. Yep.
Yeah. So I didn't follow the European court stuff closely. I was never a European tour member, but mm-hmm. You know, none of us are surprised by any of this. We knew that this was going to be a challenge. And I do know that in some instances, like with European tour, you know, I know that guys were hopeful that, you know, reasonable minds would prevail, mm-hmm. and it, a lot of the things that have been decided don't make much business sense. But it's not surprising.
Yeah.
Again, it goes back to change. We know how difficult change is, and especially when you're shaking a system up like what we have done. You know, the establishment is a real thing, and this is challenging the establishment. So there's no surprise by any of it, but you know what gets me is people think that we're just going to roll over and not fight for it. Like I'm going to continue to fight for a chance to go play major championships. You know, we're going to continue to fight to, you know, have a place to play against the best players in the world, and we have some of the best players in the world, so we're going to fight for the right for LIV to, you know, be recognized and be rewarded for having some of the best players in the world. So, you know, again, there's nothing that's surprising because we knew how challenging this situation was going to be, but we're still going to fight. Like yeah. we're still going to do what's best for our career, for the game. Because yeah. again, you know, I don't understand, you know, with the European scenario, like I don't understand, you know, how that is better for the European tour, for the DP World Tour, to not have Lee Westwood, Ian Poulter, Paul Casey, Sergio Garcia, Henrik Stenson. Like, I don't understand how it's better for that tour for those guys to not be playing. So, again, it's complex. It's I know there's no simple solution or easy answer, but we're going to continue to fight.
Yeah, it's interesting just to have the conversation, right? I mean, like, I've had my concerns about Liv. You've probably seen some of them. And then, you know, I've had some of the things that I like. It's different in what they're trying to do. And so, like, I think it's okay to have conversations about what you like and don't like and hear the other side, you know, and be able to try to understand, you know, what's happening with that. I think with that said, I'm a little baffled by what the DP World Tour has done, just as its own identity and the way this has come about. I mean, when they sat down with Liv, in my eyes, I wasn't in the room, but Liv had to offer something that had to be completely unfair to the DP World Tour to not sign up for that. I just felt like that would have been a natural alliance to some degree if they were really trying to compete with the PGA Tour. Like, that, just talking business, right? Now, I think the actions of the PGA Tour, and look, I'm a huge PGA Tour fan. I watched you your entire career. I love watching the PGA Tour. So I'm not surprised the way that they have went about it, in the position of power that they are, and the real threat that is LIV Golf and the amount of money that is being spent. I'm not surprised at all from a business standpoint in the position that they've taken. The official World Golf rankings, I do think in time has to adapt. Right? It has to adapt to what the world is. Whether you agree or not, like, the world is moving and changing, right? And so if I'm the official World Golf ranking, and I've got a tour that's, you know, met the criteria, been around a year and a half, I know it looks and feels different. There has to be something done in a balance that brings all of these different moving parts into fruition. That's just my opinion. And whether it's a 3-day or a 4-day, like, there's got to be some, just some blend here of all this, and hopefully the major championships stay above the fray. Because look, I loved having you guys. I loved watching everyone together, you know, because it seems like Taylor, and tell me if I'm wrong, it seems like all you guys are still friends. I'm sure there was some friction early, but for the most part, like, these guys understand why you went and did what you're doing. And in the end, like, you're all kind of still friends. I know there's probably still some here and there, and, you know, Freddie and Phil, they were good friends. They've kind of lost it. There's always going to be a little bit of fallout, but for the most part, is everyone still kind of like texting and say, hey man, nice one. I'm sure you got some texts from the guys in the PGA Tour and saying, dude, you're playing great golf. Well done.
Yeah. I mean, hey, like you said, this whole situation has been great for golf media. Because you guys, I say you guys, like, I mean, media in general, no, podcasts,
in general, yeah.
Golf mm-hmm. channel, everyone,
yep.
There's more content, there's more mm-hmm. stuff to talk about. And, talking about how well guys get along is not going to capture the audience's attention. So, mm-hmm. That's why it's been made up, so much to believe that there's this animosity amongst, you know, the two sides and all the players. And it's just not the reality of the situation. And, you know, I'm sure there are some guys that are truly upset and, you know, feel betrayed or, you know, whatever it may be. You know, but I also know firsthand, there's a lot of guys that are happy, with everything that has transpired on the PGA Tour since the start of LIV, everything from all the money that they're now playing for to, you know, if I'm, you know, still on the other side of things, if I was on the PGA Tour and we're playing for a lot more money and mm-hmm. there's a lot of guys that I was having to beat that are not there anymore, like, that's a win-win, mm-hmm. you know?
And I think you have to weigh that out, right? Because, like, look, I think it's true to say, at least in my opinion, I've never won a PGA Tour event, but if just looking at it from the statistics and, like, it looks like, to me, it would be easier to win a 3-day event versus a 4. If my skill set was greater than everyone else's, I would probably want 4 days, right? To have that fourth day to let that play itself out. But it just feels perhaps a little easier to win a 3 versus a 4. Now, with that said, these elevated events on the PGA Tour, without you guys in it, it's easier to win, right? I mean, so, like, you're not in the field this week. DJ's not in the field this week. Brooks is not in the field this week. Cam Smith is not in the field. I mean, of course it's easier to win that event without those guys in the event, right? Of course it's easier to win an event on LIV without Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth and John Rahm in that event, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so like it just is on yeah, both yeah. sides. And so like there's a lot to consider there, you know, in the field size and no cut 3 day versus 4 day. So there's a lot of work to be done. And I hope I do hope it transitions and it plays out, because from what I'm hearing, and tell me if I'm wrong, LIV Golf is not going anywhere.
It's not going anywhere. I'm curious though, cause this is, it's obviously discussed a lot, and I always like hearing what people have to say, you know, the 3 day versus 4 day, discussion. So you say you think it's easier to win a 3 day, you know, explain that. Tell me why you think that.
Okay. So if I knew my skill set was not as good as my competition, let's just say I felt like I was a lesser player and I'm playing up against these dogs over here, right? And I'm not going to mention
that. Yeah.
I feel like I would have a better chance in 3 days, because if I got hot, I'd only have to get hot and maybe got a few bounces here and there over 3 days. I wouldn't have that fourth day for the cream per se, the higher skill set players to come up and get me. That's just me. If I was a lesser skilled player. Now, if I was a higher skilled player and I was, you know, top 30 in the world and this and that, and I would want that fourth day, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
So
I think I would want that fourth day.
So why don't we have 5 day tournaments?
Well, because I would assume that the reason we don't is because of the way the tour was laid out, right? In the way that it's sold with sponsors, practice rounds, and then a travel day, right? So like you come in, you got a Monday travel day to get there. Tuesday, some light sponsorship stuff, blah, blah, kick some things around. Wednesday, you got, you know, bigger pro-am, blah, 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 and then your 4 day event, and then Monday, right? So like the 5 day event would kind of leak into perhaps some sponsorship stuff. At least that's my take.
Yeah. So what sponsorship stuff would it leak into?
Well, I mean, who's paying the tab, right? I mean, Wells Fargo's paying the tab this week, and there's a list of things that they're going to get, right? There's a list of things that they're going to get to put that kind of money up, for an elevated event. And if I was Wells Fargo, I'd damn straight want all those things, right?
Yeah.
I want Taylor Gooch. I want Taylor Gooch playing with my VP on Wednesday.
Right.
You know? And so I totally get all that. And 5 days would interrupt that flow, I think, in that presentation.
Yeah. Yeah. I get what you're saying there. It's just an interesting talk, because I do agree. Obviously, you know, if I'm playing John Rahm, who I think is the best player in the world, I think I'm going to have a better chance to beat him in 3 days versus 4 days as well.
You do.
Yeah. He is the best player in the world. And agreed. So if I'm playing him for my house, I want to play 3 days versus 4 days.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
I want to play a 1 day event.
Yeah. Right. Right.
I'm playing Rahm. I want 1 day.
Right. Yeah. 100%. And so, so I totally agree with that. But it's this number of four, that's why I always, cause that's pretty commonly agreed upon, is like the cream is going to rise the longer the event goes. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's why at the end of the season, the order of merit or the FedEx Cup standings or whatever it may be, like the guys who have the best seasons are always going to be at the top of the list.
Yeah.
But you know, again, it's the epitome of challenging the establishment. 4 days is all we've ever known. And so people are comfortable with it. People think for some reason that that's the reason. And you know, if LIV all of a sudden said, you know what, instead of 3 days, we're going to go to 5 days, people would still find something to challenge it on. People would say, oh, well, you know, 5 days is too long and they're not showing up till the day before. And so they're not really getting practice in because they got the sponsor stuff that they got to do and blah, 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 blah. You know, there's always going to be a reason. And, and so, you know, the three versus four, I think I've always positioned it like this. I certainly believe the major championships, the best testing grounds of professional golf, there's no doubt 4 days is the way to go.
Yeah.
Which
in official world golf rankings is going to work against you guys, right? It's going to work against you guys going 3 days, and just based off of the conversation we just had, also based off of only 48 players, because come on, let's face it, like, you're showing up to that event and you're like, okay, I only got to beat those guys. I'm not worried about those guys. I'm worried about those guys. And that's the case on the PGA Tour. Brooks said it out loud.
Yeah.
At the major championship a few years ago, right? And I was like, whoa, okay. And so I know that's the way world-class players think, like yourself. It has to be. Like, you come into that tournament and there's like, all right, man, I know a few of these guys aren't going to – I know that if I play well, I don't have to worry about those guys. They're not going to beat me. But there's a handful over there, and that I know probably a few of them aren't going to have it this week. So I really only got to beat, like, this many guys in a 48-person field. Now,
yeah,
144, okay, that number is probably going to get a little bit bigger perhaps, and someone that can come up and bite you. So that's, I think, logically is going to work against you guys in the amount of points that you're going to get. I'm not saying you don't deserve points.
Yeah.
I'm just saying right. It's going to work how many you get.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a very fair point.
Yeah.
And that's what makes the conversation so complex, because when I sit here and I beat Sergio Garcia, Dustin Johnson, Cam Smith, Henrik Stenson, Lee Westwood, when I beat this group of guys,
I've never heard of any of them. Never heard of any.
when I go and beat these guys, like, I know the caliber of golf it takes to beat those guys.
Yeah, of course.
And so, you know, now you're telling me I'm going to get less points for beating those guys than, you know, someone else, and it's a different tournament that hasn't beaten those caliber of players, but the field is deeper, so they get more points. You know, it's just it's a very complex, and I see all sides of it. You know, this is something we talk about constantly, and that's where, you know, in this new changing world, there has to be new ideas on how to, you know, get the best of the best, how to decide who the best of the best are.
Right. I agree. I agree with that. You know, I do. I think that you have to continue to evolve. The world is changing. I don't like what happened to you with the USGA. I think you have to continue to evolve with the world is changing, even if what you're looking at isn't exactly the way maybe you saw it before. Right. And it's tough to look yourself in the mirror and listen to those things. And so on that note, I'm going to confess, all right? And I want you to tell me where I'm wrong, all right? I'm going to confess, all right? Because I take bullets from – let me tell you something. I like all you guys, but your live Twitter bots, the guy, you know, the ones with no name and no face, those guys are annoying. I mean, those – they are relentless, and they make zero sense, and they don't need to be anywhere near any of this decision-making process. All right, enough of that. So here's I don't deny any of the world-class play. I've been doing this long enough. I know how great of a player you are, an iron player, and what it takes to shoot back-to-back 62. So let's put that aside. What I struggle with, Taylor, is when I turn live on, the way it's presented to me, I just feels, and I know it's a taste thing, and I know they're going after a different generation, right? And it's a different feel, and I get that, and I respect that, and maybe, by God, I'm just getting old, and I need to quit reading the newspaper. You know, like, maybe I'm that guy. I don't think I am, but maybe I am, and I watch it, and I know I'm watching world-class golfers. I know what I'm watching is elite. It just hits me. It hits me in a way that I don't feel like it's serious, you know, like, and when I watch Cam Smith take a shoey on TV in a commercial, I'm like, man, I love Cam, you know, and I'm like, I'm a casual golfer, man. Like, you and I could go out and play in a non-competitive round and smoke a cigar and have a couple beers and listen to, that's me. Like, I'm in. But when I'm consuming professional golf, and I'm watching professional golf, and when I'm watching on Live, and the way it's being presented to me just hits me in a way that it doesn't feel serious enough. Right. It just doesn't, hit me. It doesn't feel serious enough. Like I want, and maybe it's the casualness and the music and I don't know. It's just, it's a collection of it, the way that it's being, broadcast and on the TV and CW and the way they're electing to do all that. It's just kind of the whole thing adds up in a way that it's like, man, that's the way we're going to define our best players in the world moving forward. I'm just not quite there yet. I'm getting there. I'm open. I know I'm watching world-class golf, but it just hits me in a way it's just not quite serious enough. Maybe I just don't have the taste. Maybe I'm an old man and I just need to go to the basement and read my newspaper. Maybe that's where I'm at.
No, hey, I mean, again, that's what's cool about all of this. And that's why when you asked me to come on, I'm like, absolutely, let's talk. Cause it's fun having these type of conversations. Cause you're not wrong. You know, that's how you feel. And that's valid for you to feel that way. You know, again, the point of LIV is it's not the PGA Tour. Like it's not trying to be something of what we already know and what we already consume, you know, that doesn't, illegitimize the quality of golf. I get that it might be difficult for someone, especially in your position, you know, to be like, dude, these guys are trying to be the best that they can, be the best in the world. And, you know, you got all of this hoopla around it. I get it. But, you know, I believe there is room for something new in golf. And it's not going to be everyone's cup of tea. And I'm not saying that LIV has it figured out, you know, it's less than 365 days into this thing. And so there's a lot of growth and a lot of adjustments and a lot of things that LIV needs to continue to improve on. And so, yeah, I mean, I totally hear you. I totally get what you're saying. You know, it's funny because that's why I always tell people, like, I can't wait for LIV Tulsa this next week because I'm excited for, you know, my people, Oklahomans, to up close in person see what LIV really is, as opposed to just hearing about it and seeing about it and hear people talking about it and everything. Because when you're there in person, you know, you see when – I got a funny story. So in
Australia.
Thursday, after the pro-am, I spent 3 or 4 hours on the range. I was grinding. I was trying to find, a little bit of control, with my driver. And, a few of the, LIV personnel came up to me Sunday after the tournament had finished. And, one of the guys said, you know, each week we, you know, have a little pool where we pick who we think's going to win. Right. Mm-hmm. And, he goes, one of the guys, when we were making our picks for the week, one of the guys said, I saw Gooch grinding on the range. He was looking for something late. So he's obviously, he doesn't have his A stuff. He was on the range until about 7 PM Thursday. And I use that as an example because yes, the production style, it may not be to your taste, but I'm working my nuts off.
Yeah.
Like I'm trying to be the best that I can be. Sunday, I finish in Singapore after winning back-to-back weeks. I might've had a cocktail or two too many Sunday evening. And then Monday, I get on flight at 9 AM from Singapore to San Francisco to Dallas. I had to be in Dallas for a couple of days. And, so I finally get to Dallas about 5 PM, land about 5 PM Monday, you know, call it 24 hours after winning, a little more than 24 hours after winning. And, I get with my wife, get home and go to bed. And then the next morning I'm up at 6 AM working out. Did I lose you again?
Yep. You're good. Yep.
Okay. So, you know, my point being, like, my desire to be as great as I can be hasn't changed. And so that's where I struggle with, you know, hearing people say, they don't care. They don't, you know, they aren't trying as hard. They've, you know, they've made their they've gotten their bag. So why work par in practice? And, you know, that the quality of golf, the desire to be great. And I know it because I see it week in and week out, you know, of guys grinding on the range for hours before, hours after, you know, it's golfers that make it to the highest level are somewhat cut from the same cloth. And that is we work hard and our desire to be great never wavers. And so, you know, the production style, like I said, it's more tailored to different people. And I get why you say, you know, I can't take this seriously. How are these guys competing to be the best in the world when it seems so laid back? But the reality is, you know, the time that we're putting in and our desire and our hope to improve our and to be the best that we can be and to beat guys week in and week out, like that's not changed. And so that's where in due time and as people actually see Liv in the tournament in person, you know, I think people that narrative of, you know, these guys don't work so hard and blah, 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 like that will. If this was just about the money, and this was all about the money, and all of a sudden we got the money and now we don't care about money anymore and there's $4 million to make every week, so we're just gonna let someone else go and try and make that, even though I only came over here because it's all about the money. You know, there's always two sides of the coin, but you can't use both of the sides for your narrative, you know.
Well, let me finish with this. You mentioned Tulsa back in Oklahoma. You got it on your hat there. Let's see. You've got Eugenio Chikara. He's coming back. He played at Oklahoma State. I spent some time with Eugenio a couple years ago in the college showcase. He's a good cat. I like him. Charles Howell III. He went to Oklahoma State. Matthew Wolf went to Oklahoma State. You went to Oklahoma State. And then you got Abraham Anser, who went to Oklahoma. And so you got a lot of you guys coming back. Tulsa, you guys played Southern Hills. I played Southern Hills actually when I was in college. Great spot. What are we gonna see here? Is this gonna be Australia 2.0 or what's the feel coming into Tulsa this week?
Yeah, there definitely won't be as many shoeies in Tulsa as there was in Australia. No, I'm super excited about it for various reasons. Obviously, I'm passionate about my home state where I'm from, and I know Oklahomans love their sports, love their golf, and so I know they'll come out and you know be excited about it, support it a lot. They've seen some PGA Championships and U.S. Opens over the years, but you know I think everyone's pretty excited about it that week. And. And then beyond that, my wife and I started a foundation a couple years back, and we've got some cool stuff that we're going to, you know, do that week that's going to help benefit the foundation. And you know, there's been so much support from Liv and from the players. I have we have a Pro-Am Monday this next week at the tournament course, Cedar Ridge, that's going to benefit my foundation. And so, man, it's been really cool to see everyone get on board and support, you know, the tournament week, from everyone from Oklahoma to, you know, the players and everyone. So it's going to be a fun week. And, you know, there's no better place to try to win three in a row than in front of your home people.
Do it, man. Go for three. Winning is winning, right? Never. It just never gets old. And as competitive as you guys are, it could be just a single $10 match head to head. And that win is like the greatest thing in the world, right? I mean, it's just about.
Correct.
It's just about competing. So we've got the Wells Fargo this week. Next week, you guys are LIVs in Tulsa, and then the PGA Tour is at the Byron, and then you all get together at the PGA Championship. Good stuff, man. Hey, you've always been really kind here to us at the Stripe Show, so I thank you for your time, man, and coming on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll do it again soon.
All right, man. Good luck next week. Three in a row.
I love it. Thank you.
Awesome.